It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I agree. And it's funny. I have my latest book just came out a couple of days ago. It's called Career in Transition, 101 Lessons to Achieve Jobs of Success. But every time I go
I assume this has a cover on it. So I assume it's available on Amazon.
It's available on Amazon right now.
Yeah, you'll sign this for me.
Absolutely.
You leave.
Absolutely. Okay. But every time I go speak to whether it's students who are preparing for the transition from college to career, or with this book, I get calls to speak to a lot of career support networking groups. So these are individuals in their 30s, 40s, 50s who are out of work for whatever reason they're out of work. And the first thing I say to all of them, just what you just said, no matter what you do for a living, financial planning, accounting, doesn't matter. You have to think like a marketer.
Right.
You really are. We are all marketers. And to your point, with today's platforms and channels at our fingertips, whether that's a podcast like this, whether it's simply just Twitter and our LinkedIn profile, we can create and share content, thought leadership content. So they look
which
at me
kind of builds your brain.
Which builds your brain. Right? And so they look at me at first kind of funny.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions. The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, I'm Mark Beal. I'm a professor of public relations at Rutgers University. I'm also the author of Decoding Gen Z and spending much of my time nowadays traveling the country talking to corporate America, employers, marketers about the transformation that Generation Z will bring to America.
All right, Mark, thanks for coming out here and joining me today on the podcast. I appreciate it.
This is great. I've been looking forward to this one.
I thought we'd have to do this remotely by phone because you're so busy traveling all over, but I appreciate you coming out to Cranford and sitting with me. Okay, so you have a podcast, and I have a podcast, and I met you at a podcast meetup group, right, at North Venture Partners, and you were kind enough to come onto my fledgling podcast as I increased my viewers and so forth. But, you know, The Accidental Entrepreneur is, it kind of follows in what you're doing in terms of interviewing successful people and hearing their stories and learning the lessons. But before we get into that, maybe we can go back into like where you grew up, your background, how you got interested in what you do, and then we'll get into all the podcasting and the books and all that great stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I was born and raised in the Bronx. My parents were lived in the Bronx and proud of the Bronx, but my dad was in the Army, and at the age of four, I moved to the United States Military Academy at West Point. My dad was a colonel in the Army.
And you lived there.
I lived there. I lived on campus, on the base. It was fascinating. I started from kindergarten right through grammar school and elementary school. He was in the admissions office, so if you were a high school student trying to get into West Point, you had to go through. My dad was one of the folks you had to go through, but he was a full colonel up there, and just living at West Point, I mean, to be around the military, to be around the cadets is fascinating.
So are you still a big West Point guy?
Oh, big West Point guy. I'm a big West Point guy. I'd love to see them doing so well in football
now. Yeah, so I love college football. They almost knocked off Michigan. My son goes to Indiana. So he was happy to see that. It was really close. They have nothing to be embarrassed about. They really did a great job.
Yeah, no, it was great.
So close.
We had the whole family together. We were watching the game this weekend and rooting them on, hoping they were going to win that game. And so love to go back up there every once in a while. In fact, it was probably earlier this year that someone who I know well, who I was in the Army with, he also wanted to author his first book titled The Last Salute. It was a story about him and his dad. And he didn't quite know how to publish a book and get it published. So I helped him through that. And then he was kind enough to ask me to write the foreword for the book. So we ended up doing our the kickoff tour for the promotions and marketing for the book at West Point. We did a book signing up there, and always love to get back there and just, you know.
What was the book basically about?
Basically, the book, The Last Salute is about his dad was a Korean and Vietnam War veteran, and his dad always had a dream of going to West Point, but when he came back from Vietnam, he, you know, was unable to. And Robert Paley, who I actually went to the West Point Prep School with back in 1984 to 85, learned that this was Dad's dream at a young age, he made it his dream and his commitment to get to West Point and graduate from West Point when he was, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, despite a lot of hurdles and obstacles and some amazing things along the way. He somehow not only got into West Point, you know, went through the 4 years there, which was very, very challenging, and then graduated in 1989 and had this book and a book idea for years, which many people do have book ideas.
So he went to, there's a prep school for West Point?
Yeah, there's a prep school. So we, so in 1984, at the age of 17, I traveled to Fort Dix, New Jersey for basic training, and I was joined there by about 300 or so other individuals who all were going to go to the West Point Prep School, which at the time was at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey.
Now, well, let's see, 85. We're about the same age. So 85 is when you graduated high school.
Right? 84.
So I'm a December baby, yeah. So I'm a little bit behind.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so the West Point Prep School, or the United States Military Academy Preparatory School, which is what they call it, is now based actually at West Point. It's gorgeous. It's like a mini college up there. The facilities are.
So it's like a junior college after high school.
Yeah, it's 1 year in between. A lot of athletes who West Point recruits, many athletes go there. So your football players and others might spend a year there. But for me, it was just an interesting year to be in the Army and at the West Point Prep School before I went on to Rutgers. But I met Robert Paley there. He ended up going to West Point, graduated, and just had an incredible, incredible story about him and his dad. This is too good. We've got to get this published. It's just too good. And so we reconnected at a reunion about 2 years ago, and I knew he was working on the book. He knew I had written some books. We just collaborated on that. We got it published, and it's been out now for about 7 months or so. And it's just every time he goes and tells his story and the story of his dad, it's very inspiring. So I was honored that he asked me to write the foreword to that book earlier this year.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people don't realize, and I have to be honest, I haven't been able to catch up on all your podcast episodes, but on several of them and the ones that I do, a lot of people don't realize how, I mean, they live their story. So I guess they don't really realize how inspiring it is to other people. And, you know, you even said it a couple of podcasts. Hey, I think there's a book in there in terms of people's background.
I do say that a lot. Now, interesting. So Robert Paley, I had him as a guest a couple of months ago after the book came out. And I mean, listen to that podcast. Wow. Yeah. It's like I said, it's moving and it's inspiring. And the message is, you know, pursue your dreams, and dreams do truly come true.
All right, so you didn't go the military route. You didn't go to West Point and then spend, 4 or 5 years in the military, right? You went to Rutgers. And is that really where – did you study marketing and public relations and everything at Rutgers?
Yeah, so I went to Rutgers University. I got there in 1985, and my love was really media. I loved broadcasting. I loved – even at going into my college, I was writing for the Asbury Park Press. I was writing for a daily newspaper. They had me running around and covering sports events.
What are newspapers?
They still exist.
They still do. That's true.
So even as a freshman, I was doing that, but I just loved media. Yeah. And so I joined WRSU radio at Rutgers, and I called the football and the basketball games and the baseball games throughout my college career. I wrote, as I said, for a daily newspaper, and I was just fascinated with, you know, everything, all types of media. And it was between my junior and senior year when I'd gone to New York City. And in the morning, I would work for a sports public relations agency. All of a sudden, my mind started shifting to not so much covering the media, but actually creating stories that were compelling on behalf of our clients at the time. And then when I left the agency at about 5 o'clock, 5:30 every day, I ran over to 30 Rock.
Okay.
And I produced, or interned, but helped produce, one of the first ever sports radio shows in this country on WNBC.
Okay.
Before it became WFAN.
Right.
And that show was on every night from 7 to midnight. And then as soon as that ended, I would run to Penn Station, get on a 12:30 train, get back to New Brunswick, get a nap in, and go do it over again.
Seems like you go at that same pace now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I loved it. But it was that shift between junior and senior year where I said, you know, maybe I don't necessarily want to be on air or writing, but I love this idea of marketing and taking compelling stories, human interest stories, and sharing those and getting media to cover those stories. And so that's where the change happened. And from then on, I was all focused on, again, public relations and marketing.
Right. And then, so we went to college about the same time, and coming out of college in probably 88 for you, 89 for me, it was really the beginning of this whole change in our business. Maybe if you were a newspaper boy under Newsies, that was another change, right? Things were changing. Nowadays, I don't think I really was introduced to the internet till like 92. I was at a youth convention in Israel, of all places, and there were kids from Europe and the United States and from Israel. It was some sort of a leadership summit, and they're talking about this thing called the internet. Never heard of it in my life, right? And then you come back to the States. This, I think it was in 92. Boom, it's like AOL and all this stuff going on. And I was like fascinated by it. That must have been like right when you're getting into the PR, what changed the whole business.
It changed the whole business. So I, to your point, since I went to the West Point Prep School, I graduated Rutgers in 89 because I got there in 85. Graduated 89. And to your point, it's changed. The business was changing there in the 90s. In fact, I just left a class I taught at Rutgers this morning called Principles of Public Relations. And I said throughout the 90s, as you said, as the internet was starting to grow, you know, we were really focused on, again, editorial media, earned media, right. The traditional media, newspapers, radios, TV. And it wasn't until late 90s and, of course, into the 2000s. Now, all of a sudden, you have social media channels that the marketplace has changed completely.
Right.
And one, we have a lot more media nowadays. But again, a lot of it is digitally based, websites, blogs, all those
kinds of things. It was kind of hard and very expensive to build your own brand as a personal individual. You'd have to hire a publicist and do all this kind of stuff. I remember there's a book, I don't know if you've read it, called The Referral of a Lifetime. It was one of those Ken Blanchard series types of books. He co-authored with somebody. But I probably read it in the 90s, and it was about building a keep-in-touch program and staying in touch with your clients. And in those days, it was difficult. You had to have a list, maybe on a spreadsheet. We had computers. And you had to print them out. You had to mail them a postcard or mail to keep in touch with them. Nowadays, even with this podcast, it's very easy to have an electronic mailing list to blast out to, I have 3,000 people on my list. I'm sure you have a lot of people on your list. And we're really in a world where you can really build a personal brand from a PR standpoint, where it was almost cost prohibitive to the startup individual. And I think a lot of people miss that. I think a lot of people don't really know what to do with all this. So the average small business owner,
Well, I agree. And it's funny. I just, you know, I have my latest book just came out a couple of days ago. It's called Career in Transition, 101 Lessons to Achieve Jobs of Success. But every time I go
I assume this has a cover on it. So I assume it's available on Amazon.
It's available on Amazon right now.
Yeah, you'll just sign this for me.
Absolutely.
You leave.
Absolutely. Okay. But every time I go speak to whether it's students who are preparing for the transition from college to career, or with this book, I get calls to speak to a lot of career support networking groups. So these are individuals in their 30s, 40s, 50s who are out of work. For whatever reason, they're out of work. And the first thing I say to all of them, just what you just said, no matter what you do for a living, financial planning, accounting, doesn't matter. You have to think like a marketer.
Right.
You really are. We are all marketers. And to your point, with today's platforms and channels at our fingertips, whether that's a podcast like this, whether it's simply just Twitter and our LinkedIn profile, we can create and share content, thought leadership content. So they look
which
at me
kind of builds your brand.
Which builds your brand. Right? And so they look at me at first kind of funny. And I repeat, from this day forward, think like a marketer, because if you're one, if you're competing for a job and trying to get a job, well, you're competing, which means your brand is competing against other brands. But if you've got the job, as you said, well, you're probably competing for customers or clients.
Right.
And so you have to think like a marketer. And as you said, for small businesses, sometimes that's tough because the small business knows what they know about their business, whether that's a barbershop or it doesn't matter what it is.
It might not carry over to every business.
Correct.
Right.
But they've got to figure out a way to carve out some time to think, okay, I've got this small business, but I have to market and promote it. And as you said, it's a lot easier now in 2020 via channels like Facebook, Instagram.
And you can automate things.
And
too.
You, absolutely.
Yeah.
So,
much easier than it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if you talk about people that are, you know, making transition, it's true. There are people I know that are just good business people, and they can run a coffee shop, or they can run a newsstand, or they can have a large corporation. And there's some people that have found the business that they're good at, and then they sell their business, or they get laid off, or they separate from the partnership, and they're a little lost. They don't know what to do, you know, to kind of make, to be as successful in this new industry or where, you know, I don't know. It's very frustrating. I meet with a lot of people, and that's kind of where the whole idea of the podcast came from. As a lawyer, you know, I meet with business owners all the time, and sometimes it's at the end, meaning they're closing their store, they're looking to do something else, it didn't work out, I'm negotiating them out of their lease, I'm dealing with their equipment leases, whatever other obligations they have to get them out as seemingly as unscathed as I can. But sometimes if I had met them before and we worked on a business plan and we did some strategizing and I introduced them to people like you or other people in the social media industry, and that I think that they would have more of a fighting chance. So that was kind of the idea behind the podcast, like let's start sharing ideas. And that's kind of what your whole 101 lessons, you know, theme is about.
Absolutely.
a lot of this stuff, especially the college stuff, I look at, and I looked at, I obviously didn't have time to read the whole thing, I'll be honest with you. I'm been a little overwhelmed with my move, from as you were aware. But a lot of the things on there are very intuitive to me. But when I was looking back, and I hope we can go over maybe your top five to ten, when I was looking, but then I'm thinking to myself, well, when I was 25, let's say, coming out of law school, they were not intuitive to me, the things that seem simple to you and I, because nobody's really telling people. I mean, we kind of educate people like it's still 1945, right? We don't really prepare them. They're starting to in college. Now you see more entrepreneurship programs. Probably 10 years ago, you didn't. And I think that's much more important. My son's at Indiana. He already has a LinkedIn profile through some class he took and getting started. So, and I'm trying to start him on networking earlier. But maybe we can, I know we're jumping around, but maybe we could talk a little bit about, you know, how you see things from a perspective of where we are at our life versus what you think these younger people are going through. In the
Absolutely. Lives. And I think that's the light bulb that went off for me. In 2013, Rutgers University asked if I'd teach one course. You know, for the past 25, 30 years, I've been in marketing, public relations, worked for an agency in New York City.
And you were working there?
And working, yes.
So it's an adjunct position?
Yeah, it's an adjunct, one course. Okay. And it was that first course and that second course where I realized, to your point, students coming up to me after every class, by email, by phone, by text, how do I network? How do I write a resume? How do I prepare for an interview? How do I prepare for a Skype interview versus a phone interview versus an in-person interview? And all of a sudden, my brain's realizing, okay, they're not getting the answers to these questions, or they don't know where to find the answers to these questions, because I am getting them nonstop.
Right.
And so that
I
was
think one of the problems is there's so much information out there, it confuses them a lot. It's just a lot of noise at some point.
Yeah. So that was a good point. So that was the inspiration for the very first book, 101 Lessons They Never Taught You in College. And I keep saying every time I go talk about this book, it was the students who inspired the book, because they were seeking answers that for some reason they just didn't have. And so, as you said, you know, there are 101 what I call pithy lessons, but they're everything from when you leave the interview, send a thank you note, and how you do that.
Right, like, of course we would do that. When you're 25, you don't
not thinking that way. Not thinking, or, you know, I always get this one, and it's in the book. It's one of the lessons, but it's about a lot of times now that first interview is going to be a phone interview. And students say, how do I prepare? I said, well, you have to think about a phone interview. They can't see you. They don't know what you're dressed like. They don't know if you're slouching.
In your underwear.
But they can hear your voice. Right. And you come across as confident and articulate. If not, you're not going to make the cut. If you do, they're like, he or she sounded really good. Let's get them in here now. So you have to think of all those things. And again, to your point, they're at this point in their life, they haven't thought about that. Or they don't. So it's a little bit different compared to, as you said, the Career and Transition book, where these are individuals who have been in the workforce for 15, 20, 25 years.
They have the skills.
And they have the skills. And again, whether downsizing, forced retirement, whatever it is, they've been laid off. But even they, though, need the networking skills, but they need some inspiration when it comes to, again, marketing themselves and networking, because some of them have had a job for so long, they haven't had an interview for a job in 15, 20 years. They haven't dusted the resume off in 15 or 20 years. And they just need some inspiration about, again, that thought of think like a marketer, think about your personal brand, and really you've got to start to market that brand. Because for most of them, honestly, one, they haven't had to think about it. They've been settled in a job and they've been fine.
Right.
And this is the first time that they're out there now kind of competing. And for many, it's scary. You know,
I guess 40. There's a lot of people that are facing this kind of stuff.
A lot
right?
of people. I wasn't aware of it until I got my first call. This group in Princeton, that's a career support networking group. And I walked in, there were 100.
So like Princeton alum?
No. It just happened to be held. It's held in Princeton at the library.
Okay.
PSG of Mercer County is what it's called. This is Professional Services Group, Mercer County. I walked in, there were 100 people there on Friday at 9 a.m. And so I was the speaker. And it was the first one I did. And when I got done, I was more inspired because I'm listening to these people tell the stories of how they've been searching for their job and what they're doing and all these things. That one speech in Princeton has led to about 15 speeches throughout New Jersey and Pennsylvania to these groups that meet once a week, once every 2 weeks. And every time I walk in, there's 50, 60, 80, 90, 100. And they're all, you know, accountants, engineers, lawyers, you name it.
Now, some of them are laid off. Some of them are looking for change. Some of them are downsized.
Exactly. So that's that is who inspired this Career and Transition book, which just came out because they are seeking answers. Just like our college students are seeking answers as they prepare for a career. These individuals are seeking answers because they are out looking for that next job.
Okay, so maybe we can talk more about the 101 lessons in college.
Yep.
Right, so in the book, there are obviously there's 101 lessons, but you have it broken up into five parts,
yeah,
right?
Five sections, yeah.
Okay, so maybe we could highlight, it doesn't have to be one from each section, but you know, five or 10, 10's a lot, five lessons that you think are, you know, people should hone in on and follow in terms of, you know, advice from the author.
Yeah, absolutely. I can run through these relatively quickly, but your point, the first section is called Foundational Elements for Your Career. So it's a little bit of philosophy. It's a little bit of, you know, foundational work just to think of things long-term. So the very first lesson is called Success is a Marathon. And the idea there is someone who's 21, 22, graduating college, this isn't necessarily about a sprint to that first job, although I know that's important, but you're going to be at this for the next 30, 35, 40 years.
Yeah.
So try to take, if you can, just a long-term approach to, this is actually my career. It's not about just getting that first job, you know, by July 1st and being at that job.
Right, right.
It's kind of, and it's not the easiest thing to think of as a 22-year-old.
Right, no, it is a marathon, right.
So that's something that I always emphasize, is the idea that, you know, your career is a marathon, not a sprint. The second section, preparing for your career after college. And I think this is now where we're getting into things like networking and meeting people, and we
might be in your senior year, let's say.
Absolutely. And okay. One of the lessons in here is, and I know this is probably overused, but I'm still a big believer, it's, you know, pursue your passion. There's some who believe that's, you know, baloney, and that's, but you know, I teach a lot of students in public relations and marketing, and they may have a passion in music, sports, fashion, travel. Well, there's opportunities to combine marketing and sports, marketing and music, marketing and entertainment. And I have a lot of students who graduate who have done that very successfully. I've got students at NBC Sports and Marketing. I've got students with professional sports teams and professional sports leagues. I've got students who are working at, you know, in music. And so I say, you know, again, what do you love to do? What do you love? Think about if you could get a career in that space where you would love every day to go into work because it's around a subject matter you love, whatever that subject matter is.
Right, right. I think a lot of times students, young people, you know, they're looking for that thing that they love, but they don't take the time to figure out, you know, can this be a career? And they're a little lost, and they're looking for this esoteric thing I'm going to love, you know. And I think that they got to, you know, write down their goals and do the research to say, okay, you know, not everything that we love can be your career. Maybe it can, maybe it can't. But I think that, which is one of the things that this is getting to, is that you really got to do the research and figure out how you can make this career. You still got to pay your bills.
Sure.
But there's a lot of people that are very, you know, not happy with what they're doing in their life. And, you know, once you get to be our age, it's not that you can't make the change. Mm-hmm. It's harder.
Absolutely.
You have children. You have, you know, all kinds of obligations. And you can't just turn around one day and say, you know what? I'm closing this whole thing down and I'm moving on. I hate what I'm doing.
Yeah.
People have done that.
So. Yeah. But I think to your point, at 21, 22... look around, see what's out there. Again, what do you love to do? I've had calls this past week from students who graduated in May, one in particular who just said, you know, I rushed into this job and I just don't like this job. Now, she graduated in May, so she's only been on the job 3 months. And I said, well, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that.
Right. But she also doesn't have children and mortgage.
Exactly. So a little bit different. The third section is insights for interviewing. So this is actually the answers to all those questions I get asked about, you know, difference between a phone interview and an in-person. And there's two in particular here that kind of tie into each other. Lesson 55 and 56, interview employers, and culture is critically important. My point there is this. When you're going out and conducting interviews, turn those interviews, if you can, into conversations. Because to me, the candidate who ultimately wins is the candidate who the employer had the best conversation with, the most compelling conversation. If it's just question, answer, question, answer, question, answer. That's like a 15-round boxing match, right? But if you can
doesn't
convert
show a lot of personality.
Doesn't show a lot of personality. If you convert it with some smart questions, some smart commentary. But then the second part in there is, as you're in the building, as you're walking the halls, look around. Do people who are working there look like they're excited to be there? Do they look like they're collaborating? Do they look like they're working together? Or are they locked in at their cube with their head down? Because at the end of the day, culture is critically important. If you have the choice maybe between two positions, if you're fortunate to get two offers, well, was there one that seemed like a better fit for your personality?
Right, so you really have to check them out, not just let them check you out.
Exactly. And I think that's really, really important. The fourth section is just called learning on the job and internships. And I'm just a big believer, and you talked about your son, you know, starting freshman year, get internships, get experience, whether that's on campus and then during the summer it's off campus. But you want to, by the time you get to senior year, you want that resume to look a lot more than just delivered
courses
here.
That you took.
Yeah, courses, and also those, you know, again, most of us, all of us, you know, have paid our way through college. I mean, I valley parked cars for 4 years and made a lot of money, and that paid my bills.
Right.
But that wasn't on my, that wasn't on my resume.
No.
So you want to make sure you've got solid substantive experience. So then when you do go interview for those jobs in senior year, you're like, wow, look at this candidate. This guy was going to this school or this university, but look at the experience he or she has.
Right.
And so there's a big focus on that. And then the last section is kind of, again, more philosophical. The next 30 years.
Yeah.
And I know, again, for a 22-year-old, it's hard to think about the next 30 years. But I think
hopefully they'll keep the book and go back to it.
Yeah. But I think the point was just celebrate the milestones along the way. Celebrate the big and small victories along the way. The promotion here, winning a new client. Like, truly enjoy those moments. Celebrate those. And then, you know, along the way, as you get from 20 to 25 to 30 to 30, well, maybe you can pay it back to the next generation of students, the next, you know,
kind of what you're doing,
which is what I'm trying to do.
Right.
So, yeah, so that book for college students, I have students who graduated 2-3 years ago who say, I still keep this book in my briefcase or my backpack because it's got all those insights.
Right. Well, reinforces what you were trying to do and that you're doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Okay, so then you wrote one for high school students going to college, and what was the genesis
of that? Yeah, well,
that
was exactly. So the college book was all the questions my students were asking me about, again, how do I get my first job? Well, after I wrote it, I thought, I'll bet you they have a lot of great advice for high schoolers. So all I did was send out a simple email to 200-300 college students across the country, some of my students, some students who just were asking for my help. If you could offer one piece of advice to an incoming high school students going into college, who just graduated high school, what would it be? I got emails within seconds. Of course, the most common response was, don't skip class.
Yeah.
But I received email upon email upon email upon email. So these are all college sophomores, juniors, seniors, and those who had just graduated. I wish I knew this when I was a freshman in college, basically. And I just start gathering, organizing, and putting those together. That book of the four, I don't want to say it was the easiest, but it came from, and I even, in that book, every chapter, it's called 101 Lessons They Ever Taught You in High School About Going to College. Every single lesson, I credit a student and the school they went to and the year they graduated, because they inspired whatever it is, and then I just built it out a little bit more. But that book has been fun, too. It's led to high school speeches. I did deliver a high school commencement speech this spring, which was the first time for me. High school entrepreneur clubs. Wall High School down in Monmouth County has this incredible, what they call Business Academy, which is for students who have an entrepreneurial mindset.
Right.
And so they're getting internships experience as juniors and seniors in high school, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So I love the program they're running there.
Yeah, for about 4 or 5 years, I was running a chapter for the Young Entrepreneurs Academy out of Rochester, and I was kind of volunteering my way out of business. But so we ran the program for 4 or 5 years. But and this is including middle schoolers. So we were seeing kids from 12 to all the way to seniors in high school, and the things that they created, and we had a Shark Tank where they would get funding to start their business. Some of the businesses are still going on today. So I always look back and say, when I was 40 or 50, if I knew what I knew when I was 20, that's not
the way
life works, but if you knew what you knew then,
Unfortunately,
I don't know if you're in the capacity to accept it all.
Yeah.
So what's, instead of going over some top lessons, what's like what do you say the general themes are, or the things that you saw in terms of the advice that came from the college kids for the high school?
The themes were really, you know, aside from, again, never skip class, it was really take full advantage of these 4 years, go well beyond the classroom and your dormitory. College campuses have so much to offer, and you're paying for it at the end of the day.
Right.
Take advantage of every guest lecture, every event on campus, every, as you said, you know, if there's an entrepreneur club and you've got a mindset for that, join it.
Right.
Don't get to senior year. And I heard that from a lot of students who, that they regretted, but they said, I kind of wish I did a little bit more. I kind of wish I joined more clubs. I kind of wish I did go out and get some experience. So I think it's the idea of just from the first day on campus, experience it all, go out. You know, is it intimidating? Yes. Does it feel awkward as a freshman? Yes. But once you take the first step, you join that club, you join that organization, you're going to be right in the fold. You're going to be included, and you're going to be part of it, and you're going to love that you did it. So that was, I think, the biggest theme, was just take full advantage of these 4 years, start networking from day one, leverage all your professors and the relationships they may have with folks in the business world, and take full advantage. And get to senior year and don't regret that you didn't do that.
Yeah, you know, back in college, when we were in college, it was kind of hard to interact with your professors unless you went to visit with them and you interned with them. But now, through social media, you can kind of interact with
them. I proactively tell my students in class and by email, never hesitate. Engage me. Any help you need, whether that's with an internship, a job, an interview, your resume. And so I'm very proactive about it. But to your point, it is easier for them now to reach out to a professor. Can I meet, you know, during office hours?
Sure.
I want to strategize about, you know, something beyond just the coursework.
Your big book now you're doing is Decoding Gen Z. So before we talk about the book, though, you got to educate me a little bit.
Sure, absolutely.
So I was telling you, and you didn't even correct me, you verified that I am part of Generation X.
As am I.
The early days of Generation
yeah.
X, like we're on the fringe of it.
Yeah.
So what is Generation X? So I can actually tell people that. Mm. And then, you know, then we got millennials and then
yeah.
Generation Z. So
yeah. Well, it's a very just interesting time now, especially in corporate America, because you've got now 3, 4, 5 generations working side by side. Because
right.
you even still have some boomers, and I don't have in front of me the exact, you know, start and end years for all these generations. Obviously, for Generation Z, which, as you said, a lot of people ask me, officially Generation Z, according to Pew Research, who kind of sets the years, is anyone born starting in 1997
okay.
through about 2010, 2011. A lot of us rounded off and just say 95 through about 2010. So we've got that 15-year window.
All three of my kids.
Okay, so we have that 15-year window.
So millennials are before that.
So millennials are before. So millennials would be born, you know, obviously prior to 1995. So we're talking about early 90s, late 80s. You've got your Generation X, which we talked about. You know, we're both members of Generation X. We were both born in kind of 66, 67,
right.
around there. You've got boomers or even older. Obviously, many of your boomers may be retired, but you obviously can
no, start. I know guys are 70, 80
okay.
years old.
We're still working or
sure.
leading companies.
Yeah.
But to your point, Generation Z, I'm with them every single day because they are currently either just graduated college, in high school, or maybe in elementary or middle school. So I'm with them every day. I have my own incubator, so to speak. So every day, what's hot? What's trending? What's new? What's going on social media? You know, is TikTok as popular as they say because the NFL just did a deal last week? Well, it's not that popular. Some of us are on it, some are not. So, but I'm getting this in real time. So here's, you know, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, the light bulb went off. I'm like, well, I'm with Gen Z all the time. I was a marketer, am a marketer for 25, 30 years. If I'm fascinated by this group, I would think anyone who's marketing a business, a brand, needs to better understand them because over the next 5, 10, 15 years, as I like to say when I do interviews, if you don't understand Gen Z and get Gen Z, you could be out of business in 15 years. And I still believe that.
Right.
Because if you don't understand Gen Z, you're not going to understand Gen Alpha, which are currently 1, 2, and 3-year-olds.
Okay.
So I just love this generation, but it goes back to the point you made earlier about they have an incredible entrepreneurial spirit. Using technology, using channels, using platforms, they're creating businesses in 7th grade, 8th grade, 9th grade, high school.
It's easier to do now.
Easier to do.
Yeah, sure. They don't know any different.
They don't know any different. And so they are unlike any generation before them. They do not consume traditional media. They're not reading newspapers. They're not really watching traditional television, but yet they consume content and love content. So recording a podcast here. My latest Gen Z survey, and I do them almost every quarter nationally. I have one that's going to be completed here in a few days. 56% to 60% regularly download podcasts.
Yeah,
which
is becoming bigger and bigger
yeah.
and bigger. Which, ironically enough, is not really like my audience as a lawyer. But
understood. Yeah,
it seems to be bleeding over
yeah.
from the kids to the parents.
Yeah, and so you think, well, that seems strange. Podcasts, it's yeah. So then you say, why? And they say, it goes to all the other content we consume. Anytime, anywhere, on my time, on my device,
right.
that's the kind of content I want. And a podcast is pretty simple. Download it, and if I'm commuting between campuses at Rutgers on a bus, I can listen all the time. If I'm working out, running, I can listen all the time, but I'm doing it on my time.
Right.
It's not, I have to tune in at a certain time.
Yeah.
And so that's really the content they consume. It's why they over-index on YouTube, they over-index
Netflix.
On Netflix,
yeah.
because it's on their time. Earlier this year, I taught 2 or 3 classes the day after the Oscars. And as you and I growing up, now Oscars is a big deal.
Right, sure.
Out of 110 students, how many watched? I think 4.
Yeah, no.
And they, again, why? We don't want to waste our time.
Right.
We're not going to waste 3-4
that?
Hours. The next day, I can get in snippets
yeah.
on my time across Instagram and Twitter, and that's all I need.
My kids came to me several months ago, my younger one. She said, Daddy, there's this new series on Netflix. It's called Friends. It is so funny. And I said to her, yeah, well, it's not a new series. It's what I grew up with. Really? And she's probably watched the series along with my other kids 4 times. I don't know. They just keep watching it. And then there's something coming out, some reunion the 25th anniversary. So it's fun. And I think that is like the most downloaded TV series, older series on Netflix. It's some nutso like that. But it's funny where when you're younger, you always knew there was some day when your kids would either, you know, say to you like, you know, what's that, Daddy? A flip phone, for example, right? Or you would say that to them, like, what is this?
Yeah.
My dad came to me the other day. He's in his 70s, mid-70s, and you know, he sees all the branding I'm doing, the podcasting and so forth. And as much as I'd like to monetize this, it's really a marketing tool for me, right? So he says to me, oh, I want to listen to some of your podcasts. How do I do that? Where do I find these things? You know, I was like, what? Are you serious? So it's funny. There's this, and I guess it's technologically based, right? There's this huge gap between, you know, what we, because we kind of started in the non-technological age and we grew into the technology age. Our kids were born with technology. They don't know what tapes are. They don't know what 8-tracks are. You know, they don't know what, I mean, they know newspapers, I guess. They've seen them, but they wonder, what do you do with them?
Yeah.
What's the point, you know?
Yeah.
I remember one time when I was probably 13 years old, and my dad and my mom were going to a friend's bar mitzvah, and he wanted CDs as a gift. That's what he was looking for. So my dad asked me, he didn't understand why his friend's son wants certificates of deposit. Why would he want this in the bag? I said, Dad, I think he means compact discs. Now, our children almost don't even know what compact discs are. They do, but they almost don't exist.
Yeah, so, well, it's interesting. I speak probably weekly to big groups about Generation Z. In fact, this week I'm speaking to the American Marketing Association here in New Jersey. And one of the first slides
older groups to understand.
These are marketers. So a lot of them are marketers.
They're marketing
to generations. But they want to better understand.
But they're older like us.
Yeah. So, but they could be from agencies, brands.
Okay.
And so one of the first slides I put up, I wish this was my quote, but it's not. So I attribute it to the CMO of MTV. And her quote is, Generation Z is the first generation that learned to swipe before they could wipe. And that says it all. They had technology in their hands at the age of one.
Yeah.
And to your point, it's just natural for them. And so that drives everything. Like, you know, older generations get updates on their phone. They're like, I don't want to touch that. Who knows what's going to do my phone? Generation Z is like, bring me. I want more updates. I want them to be, you know, because it's all about efficiency, speed, immediacy. If it helps me get the job done. Now, the job might be homework. It might be the internship, whatever. And that's the other thing we're starting to see a little bit. This idea is, as Generation Z does graduate college and goes into the workforce, they are looking for things like what I call WFA, work from anywhere. Is there a chance that on Friday I could work from anywhere because I can do it all on my phone and my laptop?
Right, everything's virtual now.
And we're going to start seeing shifts in that as well.
Yeah, it's funny when I remember at the shopping mall, you'd be there and they'd have the big screens with things and the little kids would go up and they'd try to swipe and it wouldn't do anything. Now maybe it even does something.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just because they're just born that way with these flat devices that this isn't even a phone. It just has a phone in it.
That's right.
As opposed to the days when it was a phone that did some other things.
So I delivered a speech the other day and the question came up along the lines of, because again, I say that Generation Z is going to transform the workplace. They're transforming media. They're going to transform marketing. And someone in the audience said, well, you know, at the workplace, there's all generations. I said, absolutely. My feeling right now is every generation has something they can offer. So individuals like you and I, Gen X, well, we've got experience. We've got a lot of contacts.
Right.
We have networks. We have case studies. We have success stories. But Gen Z is coming to us with maybe tech, solutions, innovation, different way of looking at things. So all I say is try to be collaborative across generations because I think we all have something to offer each other.
Sure.
And as opposed to being closed ear to, well, they're young, they don't know anything. They're old and they don't know.
I know. You know, that's so I have a 14-year-old, a 16-year-old, so two girls in middle school and high school, and then my son's in Indiana.
Okay.
And he went there as a business major. He's now a business minor, but he's majoring in informatics, which I don't think 5 years ago existed, right? So I didn't know what it was at the time. And now I'm learning about all big data and AI and all the great stuff. And I think it's a great place for him to be. But I remember when he was in high school and college, you know, we've had many conversations where he said, you know, Dad, you don't understand. You know, I said, you know, I'm 52 years old. I got 50 plus years experience on earth. You're 18, 19. I'm sure you know everything. I said, the only thing the two of us have in common is that when I was your age, I thought I knew everything also.
That's true.
And then found out later on. And every once in a while, there's a, you know what, Dad? You were right, that type of thing. And then they forget. They'll have very short memories. But I think that, as we grow, I think, and maybe that's our age, you know, sometimes we got to, as parents, got to step back and remember that our kids do know things.
Sure.
Even though we tell them. Well, it's, you know, sometimes it's because I'm telling you that because I'm your parent. Yeah, I don't have to be right all the time.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, we need to be wrong and the kids learn. But I see him, you know, working hard in school and going through all these things. And I think that, you know, and I want him to read these books because I think that some of the things that he can learn from other people's experiences, if he's open-minded enough, hard to be when you're 19, open-minded enough to all those ideas, it'll give him, a little bit of a leg up.
You mentioned, as you were describing the things he's studying, you mentioned AI, artificial intelligence. So when I do conduct interviews and when I do speak, whether it's to college students or folks in a career transition, I say, you know, we hear a lot about AI, but what I want you to focus on is what I call HI, human interaction. And it's just like you and I getting together today.
You were doing a podcast with somebody, and they brought up that HI, and you said, okay, this is your turn. It was only recently. It was like 3 or 4 episodes ago, right?
Yeah, they brought that, and I've loved that term, and I've been using it
TJ.
All over. Yes, Pignatori.
Yes.
Yes, okay. who has...
Now you know that I really
talk
do
about an entrepreneur.
Podcast.
Talk about an entrepreneur. Impressive guy. But it's the idea that in today's tech-driven society, and especially for your son and, you know, Gen Zers, but all of us, if you can now master HI, where you can actually have a conversation with someone, you can sit down over a formal interview, in a formal interview, and just have a conversation, it's going to set you apart because having been raised on technology, sometimes Gen Zers become so reliant on it, they can't actually pick up their head, have a conversation.
Right.
And that will set you apart in the interview because they're going to, again, say, you know, that student from Indiana had the best conversation with him.
Right.
Where some of the others didn't even seem like they could have a conversation. So that's the whole idea of HI is, you know, if you can master human interaction, complement that with what you know about technology, you're going to go places.
I think that's a good point because at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We're always going to be human beings. We don't live in, you know, in cubicles and just interact through our devices.
That's right.
Because at the end of the day, we need human interaction. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. People want to look for somebody who has the personality to, you know, to say, okay, I'm bringing this person into my company, into my world, into our company. We want to make sure that they have that ability to interact.
And that ties too to this, again, the new book, Career and Transition. I learn or I hear a lot from, again, 30, 40, 50. So they're trying to get that next job. And so many are relying on just hitting the send button on the resume through an application in response to a posting. Well, now the application process becomes so tech driven that most companies are using what's called ATS, applicant tracking systems, and they're using algorithms to measure how many words in your resume match up against the job description.
Before it even gets to it.
Before it gets to it.
Right.
And so many individuals are saying, I've applied to 30 jobs. I haven't heard back. I said, it doesn't surprise me.
Right.
That's only one part. You've got to now use your HI and network within that building. Who knows, who knows, who knows, who knows, who
knows.
Get
on LinkedIn and find out who the person is and reach out.
And you've got to get in there.
Fight your way in.
Simultaneously to your application going there, you got to fight your way in. I say, you know, you've got to get what I like to call it a cup of coffee interview. I've never drank coffee in my life, but I've had millions of cup of coffee meetings. And what those are, it's an informal way to get in and introduce yourself and meet someone without the formality around it with the goal of them saying, I'm going to walk you down to HR. I'm going to at least get your resume to HR. I like the conversation we had. And so that's the key today in securing a job is, yes, you do have to formally apply, but you need to have a second proactive approach where you're networking your way into the building.
So you maintain this level of, what's the word, energy with no caffeine?
Yes, with no caffeine. Never had any. And it's just funny because I promote a cup of coffee meetings.
I had one this morning. I couldn't survive without it. I used to think I could, but then I was like, oh. So the decoding Gen Z is a little bit flipping the 101 things. It's instead of saying, here's lessons for Gen Z, it's saying, okay, what can we learn?
What can we learn?
So what can we learn?
Yeah, and so it's lessons for a few different groups. Again, corporate America, which to me, that's, you know, employers who are going to be hiring. They've started in the last year or two. They've hired them. So what do they need to know about them? Marketers who represent brands, Pepsi, Coke, Nike, whatever the brand is, this is your main audience. So Couple things we need to know. In 2019, Generation Z became the largest consumer segment in this country. So there are more Gen Zers now than millennials, more Gen Zers than Gen X. They are the largest consumer segment. They have a spending power of well over $150 billion, but as we know, many of them are in high school and grammar school.
Like coming some from your kids, parents.
Coming from your parents, but right. They're influencing decisions.
Of course.
Which doesn't surprise us.
Influence. They probably have a credit card. They're spending the money.
Doesn't surprise us. It depends on, again, where you're coming from, whether you're the employer. If you're a media company, you have to quickly realize, to your point, they're not going to the corner store and buying a paper in the morning. They may be going online and reading my.com. Or if you're a television company, you know, they're not tuning into the 6 o'clock news, but again, they may be tuning in somewhere online to see news and sports and entertainment. So media companies have to really take
seems
a look
like
at
it
that.
Gets pushed to them more. They told me Facebook's for old people.
Yes, it
they
is.
They do Instagram, Snapchat, all this stuff.
Oh, you're,
right?
you've read all my research.
That was a couple of years ago. I was like,
well,
it is?
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah. So my latest research, Instagram, especially because of Instagram stories, is now far and above the most popular social media channel for them. Snapchat, obviously, is still popular. Facebook, I love you said that. That's what they tell
well,
me. Facebook
owns
for old
Instagram,
people.
Right? Which,
yeah, so it's interesting.
Twitter, right?
So as a corporation, Facebook owns Instagram.
Right, they're smart.
Twitter they go to really for news. That's where their news source, you know, what's
right.
happening, what's newsy. So you're right. There's that. Then there's just the idea of, again, we talked about earlier of they are not, if you were a media buying agency and you were trying to buy media, let's just say for Taco Bell, because Taco Bell is a, you know, Gen Z is their primary audience. You know, you're not buying print, magazines, whatever.
Right, you won't reach them.
No, you right. want to buy Instagram. You want to buy pre-roll on YouTube videos. You know, you want to see the big message I throw out to folks like that is the marketing mix is completely different. You have to rip up the old playbook when it comes to the media buying. Even podcasts, as I said, you could buy across podcasts. Now, they may
yeah,
not
hear
be.
Ads. They're not going to be on ours.
They're not
going
to be ours, but
yeah,
it may be a comedy podcast, a
right.
music podcast.
I hear a lot of business ones. They have all kinds of
absolutely.
You know, ads.
Absolutely. So they're listening into that. So I think that's, you know, that's just some of it around Gen Z. From an employer standpoint, be open to what they're going to bring you as far as solutions, changing, you know, the ways you might have operated, technology. They're going to come in with a lot of ideas.
Right.
I would listen. I'd also be open to that idea that, you know, they really can do anything from anywhere, any place. And so you're going to get a lot more over the next year or two or three of, you know, well, could I work remotely?
Right.
One,
they're working
two.
For cloud-based environments,
exactly.
things like that.
Exactly. Sure. So I go back to if you're a marketer or an employer, and if you're like, nah, they're just like every other generation. I don't need to pay attention to them.
Well, we'll
I
see
think
where
that's
we are
a
in 10 years.
I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I think we're pushing on time because you got to be somewhere
yep.
soon. So this podcast, The Accidental Entrepreneur, is really for hopefully, for business owners out there who are either getting started or they've been in business, they're just like local businesses, they're trying to grow. What's maybe, you know, two or three things, you can do more if you want to, of advice that you would give to the business, I should have told you this ahead of time, but I'm dropping it on
Sorry.
You now, to the business owner, the either they're getting started, I don't care if they're Gen Z or they're, you know, 50 years old, or they're new to business, what kind of things would you give them as advice?
Absolutely, and we touched on some of these, so it might be repetitive, but I think the first
fine.
And foremost is, you're starting a business because you presumably know something really, really well, have a passion for something. So again, whatever that business is, okay, doesn't matter what it is, but you know you have this skill in whatever this thing is. Well, you need to market that business though. You need to really market it. And as you said earlier, it's a lot easier in today's world with the channels we have available to us to market your business. In fact, you don't even necessarily need to use paid advertising
right.
because you can create content across Instagram, and in some cases Facebook might make sense depending on the business. So the first thing is, you know, think like a marketer, not just, you know, again, I hate to go back to this example, but I'll use again, you know, I know how to cut hair, so I'm going to start a barbershop. Great.
Right.
You got to market the barbershop.
Absolutely.
You've got to get out there and market. And if maybe you don't
people still have to come and get their hair cut, they should
exactly.
know about you.
So maybe right. if you don't have a marketing mindset, you're the world's greatest barber. Perfect. Well, it's probably a county college or a college right down the road where maybe you could, you know,
get an intern
or two. Have them launch your social media channels. Have them
Rutgers and Montclair have
oh
they got students that want experience.
Universities
right?
all throughout the state and throughout the country all
sure.
have you're right marketing students. Many of them also have their own agencies now where students have a student run agency and they're looking to help local small businesses in the area where they will handle your social media for you. They'll create content. They'll shoot videos. All the things that maybe you just don't do. So I think that's really, really, really important. The second thing I'd say, which kind of ties into our high school, college, Gen Z.
Right.
Who are your audiences? Who are your, you know, if you're going to rank them, who is my primary audience? Is there a secondary? Is there a tertiary? Because then that's going to dictate how I need to reach these folks. So one example, if my primary audience, I'm just making it up. Let's just say I'm a financial planner, a local financial planner, but I really focus on folks who are about to retire or retiring. Those people are consuming a lot of traditional media. Those people are on Facebook. That's important because I need to go where they are.
But they're not on Snapchat.
But they're not on Snapchat. Instagram. So I need to know that.
Right.
Because that's where I need to be having conversations with them and engaging them, whether through content like a podcast or something else. On the reverse, if my primary audience is a bunch of 19, 20, 21-year-olds, well, I need to be on Snapchat. I need to be on Instagram. I need to be doing things where I can engage those consumers. And so I think that's important is who are your key audiences and how am I going to reach those key audiences? Again, thinking like a marketer.
Well, I think a lot of business owners don't take the time. They think, well, I can sell to anybody. I said, well, that's true. But if you better focus on who you're going to target because anybody is nobody sometimes.
That's right. You know? That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're just, you know, I'm going to market to everybody. Well, that's not really a strategy.
Right.
So become laser focused on, I would say you should definitely have a primary audience, but it could be a secondary and a tertiary. But and those audiences aren't always necessarily age. It could be life stage. It could be
interests.
Right. Take time from, again, the small business and on a big poster board, try to identify who are these audiences. And then if you don't have the answers of where they're kind of living, meaning media-wise, that's fine. Like I said, call the local college, see if maybe you can become a client for the agency they have there or an entrepreneur club,
sure,
that kind of thing.
Okay, so we're running out of time, but before we wrap up, I just want to, so if we could put in the show notes, I'll put in your bio, your website, how to get in touch with you. Maybe we could put some links to some of the agencies, the student agencies available to people.
Yeah.
Because I think they just don't know these programs exist.
I agree.
To find these, they're trying to do it themselves and they don't.
I don't think they're thinking that way, but it's a win-win for everyone.
They think if they're not IBM, they don't have an internship
exactly.
program. Exactly. It actually, the kids might get more experience with a
local business. That's the thing. To me, it's really a win-win. So the small business, the entrepreneur, you're right, probably doesn't have big budgets for that. The student's just looking for experience and to apply what they know when it comes to media, content, social media to help. They're not necessarily looking for, they're just looking to get that experience.
So
that
resume.
So that experience can go on the resume. And so one, they can do it virtually. They don't have to report somewhere every day. Two, they can bring you a lot of great ideas and they can put them to work right away where you are going to start seeing some business impact. So I would, you know, no matter where you live in the state or around the country, you know, draw a little map. Is there a county college nearby? Is there a four-year university nearby? Somewhere within that university or college, there are groups and organizations, entrepreneur groups, marketing agencies that the students belong to, clubs or whatever. And they're looking to help, again, businesses.
And you can probably find information on their website. Right?
Absolutely.
Through their website,
find
the marketing professional.
Easily.
Ask them, right?
Easily, yes.
Nowadays. Okay. Mark, thanks for joining me. And we'll get this out hopefully in the next month or so.
Great. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Mark.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.